Well, hello again, y'all. We're going to continue on with part two of the Bigfoot series, so if you haven't listened to part one, you should go back to the previous episode so you don't miss anything. This time, let's talk about Bigfoot's prevalence in Appalachian folklore, theories about what he is and where he came from, and go over my thoughts for the past two episodes. I'm Candace, and I'll be your guide. So, Bigfoot is not a new concept by any means. In my research for the earliest known record, the first recorded Bigfoot sighting is from 986 AD. Leif Erikson and his crew of Vikings, upon discovering new land in what is present-day Canada, report seeing what they described as huge, hairy men. These men were, quote, horribly ugly, hairy, swarthy, and with great black eyes, end quote. They also note the men towered over them, lived in the woods, had a rank odor, and made deafening, shrieking sounds. The Vikings deemed these creatures the name Skelring. As we know, Appalachia, particularly in past centuries, is composed of very rural and isolated pockets of development, with most people living in small towns scattered throughout the mountains. With the remote nature of Appalachian livelihood, it's unsurprising that the concept of a nationwide or worldwide cryptid wasn't a consideration for them. Instead, there are many local or regional Bigfoot-like creatures documented throughout Appalachian folklore. Overall, these regional creatures match the description of the stereotypical Sasquatch. Big, hairy, stinky, ape-like guys. But sometimes these local beasts have particular features unique to the area. For instance, the Pennsylvania White Bigfoot I mentioned last episode. The Ohio Grassman, sometimes also called the Minerva Monster, is another instance of a local Bigfoot with unique attributes. Aside from his notable orange glowing eyes, the Grassman is said to get his name from the small grass huts he builds for shelter. This hominid creature in particular is said to be much more territorial than the typical Bigfoot we know, and, as expected, also incredibly strong. There are a couple of stories spanning the last couple centuries about the Grassman throwing someone from a carriage, peering through windows, and killing a family dog. It's also very notable that this guy has been spotted in groups of two to up to five creatures together. Sightings of the Grassman in particular date back to at least the 1700s, where documentation exists that the Native Americans of the region were familiar with the creatures and called them wild ones of the woods. The natives would purportedly leave food as offerings to the creatures in exchange for peace. They also believed that the hairy men had a deeper level of intelligence and actually did understand the concept of keeping peace when it was beneficial for them, hence the food offerings. The Tennessee Wild Man is another folkloric entity who displays variances on the stereotypical Bigfoot. He is said to err more on the human side of the appearance rather than the ape. More like a Neanderthal with excessive hair that's usually orangish in color. The wild man is said to have piercing red eyes and is sometimes described to have claws and be incredibly strong and agile. He is another aggressively territorial cryptid and is even said to target women, sometimes grabbing them by the hair and attempting to drag them away. He also emits a loud scream that has been likened to a war cry that terrifies all who hear it. The stories of the Tennessee Wild Man trace back to the 1800s, with the primary story being that the beast was somehow captured and used as a circus attraction for years until it later escaped. The Virginia Woodbugger is a Sasquatch-like entity that is said to prey upon children. Now, just a side note for any of y'all that may not be familiar with this specific Appalachian terminology, the term booger is a word used to reference a monster or an unknown creature. It's similar to the title of boogeyman. So they're not referencing something that comes out of your nose. The woodbugger is said to carry children off into the forest, never to be seen again. However, that's really all the information I can find about the supposed woodbugger. In the mid-2000s, the TV show Finding Bigfoot meandered through the state of Virginia, seeking some Appalachian Sasquatches, making a quick stop in Virginia's smallest city, Norton. When this happened, the city officials saw dollar signs. So, the woodbugger became the official town mascot, with a statue in town, establishments bearing his name, t-shirts, and an annual Woodbugger Festival. The Woodbugger Fest official website states the following, quote, "A Bigfoot-like creature that allegedly roams the woods of Southwest Virginia. He's a very tech-savvy creature, and he keeps in touch via Facebook and Twitter," end quote. All that to say, yes, I'm sure Bigfoot sightings in the area are plentiful like they are throughout Appalachia, but this seems to be purely capitalization on the idea of a distinct entity. And given especially that this is really all I can find about this guy, I'd say there's no validity to him in a folkloric way of his hobby of kidnapping children. The Midnight Whistler in Kentucky is a classic Bigfoot, with the only known difference being that he is said to be fully nocturnal, and the only sound he makes is a whistling that can be heard from the forest. One of the more famous folkloric Bigfoot sightings was Daniel Boone's experience in the late 1800s. He claimed that while exploring the Red River area of Kentucky, he and his men came across a 10-foot-tall, hairy giant, which they shot and killed. Unfortunately, further details about this supposed encounter are slim. Boone called his creature a yahoo. Sometimes it was pronounced yay-ho at the time. Daniel Boone is said to have used the name Yahoo as it was the name of the giants written in Gulliver's Travels, one of his favorite books. Interestingly, he didn't write about it at the time, and I found two different stories on how this encounter was discovered. One is that Boone wrote about the experience in a letter to a friend, and that letter was unearthed during research for an early 1990s biography written on him. The other version is that there was a dinner party where Boone was in attendance, and someone asked for a story he hadn't already shared, and this is the one he came out with. As with any folklore, no one knows if this truly happened. It seems to me that for someone who did keep record of his explorations and important events, to neglect to document this in any meaningful way suggests that it was a story of entertainment rather than truth. Aside from the local and regional Sasquatches mentioned, there are of course regional names given to the hominids that may just fit the bill exactly and not have distinctive known differences from the Bigfoot we know, the Old Men of the Mountain in West Virginia, for instance. Then we could also expand to the folkloric creatures that have Bigfoot-like appearances, but far more fantasy-esque traits. In the effort of time, I'm just going to cover these super quickly, but just keep in mind while I talk that all of these guys look like Bigfoot. The Raven Mocker is a creature of Cherokee legend from Southwest Virginia who can shapeshift into an old man or woman and eat their hearts without opening their chests. The Boojum is a creature in Haywood County, North Carolina, who has an affinity for voyeurism and likes to watch women bathe, as well as for gemstones. He lurks in caves, hiding his gemstones in the bottom of moonshine jugs, because no self-respecting Appalachian would pour out moonshine onto the ground and discover the gems in the bottom. But if they drank the shine, the Boojum would take his gems and slip away while they were passed out drunk. The Boojum managed to get to know a woman that he was peeping on because she felt sorry for him. Her name was Annie, and the two fell in love. While the Boojum was away for days at a time collecting gems, Annie would miss him and would call out to him using his own call, a hooting, whooping sound. When he heard her, they would reunite. It is rumored that this is the origin for the Appalachian term hootenanny, which is a clamor of noise or music. The Whirling Wimpus is a creature of the woods in Tennessee who whirls around faster and faster until he ultimately turns invisible. Makes me think of the Looney Tunes Tasmanian Devil. People who stumble upon him accidentally get hit with his rapidly rotating fists, or he uses it as a form of an attack, intentionally. Then he turns them into molasses, for some reason. Now, one of the big questions is, what is Bigfoot and where did he come from? Physical evidence is fairly limited to plaster casts from supposed tracks, which of course can be faked. There's limited video and photo evidence, which can also be faked, and hair or fur submitted for testing. So, of course, I zeroed in on those lab results. While there are sites that claim that hair was collected, say from a barbed wire fence, that could not be identified through DNA as any known creature, I could not find any evidence of this. My research indicates that all hair and fur analysis completed was traced back to creatures of known origin. Now, sometimes these results were really interesting, like a very rare breed of bear, or even a fossilized specimen from a 40,000-year-old polar bear. But the results were still known animals. Only one was even primate in origin, and that one was human hair. Now, a conspiracy theorist could easily argue that most labs are government-run, and the government has a vested interest in obscuring the existence of Bigfoot. I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but I can acknowledge that argument. Skeptics argue that Bigfoot sightings are either entirely faked or are a matter of misidentification of bears or escaped gorillas or chimpanzees. Of course, there's always the classic "you're seeing things" argument as well. Believers, though, have some interesting ideas of what Bigfoot is and where he came from. Some believe he's simply a Neanderthal that somehow survived. Others believe he is a primate that somehow crossbred with a human. Some believe him to be strictly paranormal and possibly a Native American nature spirit. But some of these theories get even more interesting. There's the theory that Bigfoot is actually a time-traveling Neanderthal that visits us from the past who may actually have a message for us. There's the alien theory that he's visiting us from outer space. Some believe he is an interdimensional being, flickering in and out of our existence between various dimensional planes. Some think he is just a particularly unattractive human, possibly with physical differences that make him an outcast in society, so he's retreated to live in the forest. One of my personal favorite wild theories is that they are half human, half fallen angel of the biblical sense. This theory likens Bigfoot's appearance to Goliath from the Bible, I guess because he was a giant? I don't know. If Bigfoot does exist, the most logical theory I can find is that Bigfoot is descended of the Gigantopithecus, a large ape-like creature that existed in Asia about 300,000 years ago. The theory is that they crossed over to the U.S. via the Bering Land Bridge. The Bering Land Bridge theory is that very roughly, about 50,000 years ago during the last ice age, sea levels were low and land connected Russia to Alaska during that time. It's theorized that ancestors of our Native Americans migrated from Siberia to Alaska, Canada, and into the modern-day U.S., utilizing the land bridge. So the theory is that the Gigantopithecus came over utilizing the bridge as well and sparsely populated North America. It also perfectly explains why Bigfoot sightings are so much more prevalent in the Pacific Northwest. Now, when I learned about this theory, it was intriguing. But y'all, get this. And if it sounds like I'm overexcited about this part, it's because I am. When I learned about this theory and looked further into my thoughts on it, I learned there are no reported Bigfoot sightings in Hawaii. This leads me to give heavy credence to the Bering Land Bridge theory. Unfortunately, not much at all is known about Gigantopithecus, because the only evidence of their existence was a couple jawbones and some teeth, so we can't really say what they may have even looked like. Okay, y'all, now that we've had at least a brief overview on the wealth of history and speculation on Bigfoot, now let's talk about these past two episodes. I did incorporate a little of my thoughts into the segments as I went this time, but to dig a little deeper, that first Bigfoot encounter story, the one I read verbatim, is so good. It's been a couple weeks, but to remind you, it's the one where the guy was trout fishing out in northeast Georgia and saw the Bigfoot basking in the sunshine on the banks. Admittedly, part of it is biased because I'm a little bit familiar with the general area his encounter took place in. And I also love the good old boy way he spoke to Bigfoot. And to Bigfoot, of all things or people. Now, this is, I guess, a little bit of a side note, but I think it's worth mentioning that the best known Bigfoot footage ever recorded, the Patterson-Gimlin footage out of Northern California in the 1960s, has never been disproven. Believers argue that with the special effects and costuming abilities available in the 60s, that a suit this convincing could not exist. Skeptics argue that Patterson did not have the best track record, with being overall scammy in his personal life, taking advantage of friends for material items and money, leaving many on the hook for unpaid loans, and even physically assaulting those that he took issue with. I didn't go into this in the meat of the episode because I just didn't want to cover all the intricacies of this piece of footage and all the histories and relationships involved. But I do think in an age where a lot, I would venture to say most maybe, but definitely a lot of Bigfoot footage has been debunked, it's definitely worth noting when the best bit of evidence that we have has never been disproven. The lab results were really interesting to me. I mean, for one thing, because they did find some really wild stuff in the lab results, like the very rare species of bear and that fossilized polar bear. But if people commonly believe that Bigfoot sightings are misidentification of largely bears, who are we to say that Bigfoot is not descendant of some kind of interesting breed or variety of bear? Who knows? Now, the question is, what do I think? And honestly, I'm not even sure how to answer that. I am definitely very open to the possibility of Bigfoot being real. But at this point, I can't yet say that I believe in Bigfoot. There have been too many sightings over too many centuries for me to claim that he is not real. And I've heard too many excellent stories of encounters, Earl and John's included, for me to disbelieve in that experience. I'm just not entirely sold yet. And while I do feel that it's unlikely this living creature has evaded society and science for this long, several known animals we're well familiar with now were initially folkloric creatures with laughable sightings, the gorilla included, and the platypus, but it's a ridiculous animal. So I guess my opinion can be best summed up by that popular phrase, "I want to believe." I do think if Bigfoot exists, that he is simply an animal that has avoided taxonomy all this time, and maybe even coming over via the Bering Land Bridge. Although some of those other theories are definitely entertaining. I really appreciate y'all listening to me go on about a hairy, stinky man-beast for 2 episodes. I want to know what you think. Are you a believer? Are you more like me who's really open to the possibility, but just not quite entirely sold yet? Or, you know, even if you think this is all lunacy, either way, I'd love to know. You can reach out to me on social media. You can find me on most of those at Obscure Appalachia. Or, of course, through the website or email. Those will be in the show notes. A big thank you to my patrons, as always, for helping me continue to make episodes. Thank you to everyone for listening. Until next time.